Business Matters, in association with Donegal ETBs for their education and training services, offering globally recognised Prince 2 project management training, which leads to better results in your projects.
Hi, I'm Kieran O'Donnell. You're welcome to Business Matters. Coming up on this week's programme, I'll be talking to Head of Economic Development with Donegal County Council, Anne-Marie Conlon, and the job-seeking couple based in Chrysler, Peter and Mairead Collett. And for this week's Backing Business segment, I'll be joined by Letterkenny IT's Head of Business, Michael Margy. Anne-Marie Conlon took up the role of Donegal County Council's Head of Economic Development in January 2020. Within weeks, the coronavirus struck and the country went into its first lockdown. It's been a busy 14 months for Anne-Marie and her department, who have been concentrating their efforts on helping Donegal businesses survive in what continues to be a challenging economic climate.
Kieran, I suppose I started my own role in economic development in Donegal County Council in January 2020, and little did I know within 3 or 4 weeks that the world would change greatly, and by mid-March that year we were wholly in a pandemic, and the world had changed, as you know. So I suppose we had to change what we were doing. We had to change our plans. We had to look at how we can support businesses during what we thought at that point in time would be about 11 to 12 week period. But here we are, 13 months later, and we're still in a very difficult situation. So a period of change, but a period, I suppose, it's been really good for us in that we have been able to be agile. We have been able to kind of change what it is we do, and I suppose supporting businesses and supporting industry in the county has been to the fore of what we're doing.
Any big lessons that you've learned over the last 13 or 14 months, Emery?
Yeah, I suppose it's all, every day is a learning, I suppose, really, in terms of the work that we're doing. And I suppose, really, in terms of looking at what we're doing as to promote economic development in the county, I suppose what we see is it's our job to kind of help create that environment where businesses can survive and where businesses can flourish. And like, what do we need to be doing as a local authority to allow that to happen? So I suppose looking at what our role is, as opposed to maybe other agencies and the county. So, for example, one of the key things that we'll be doing now over the next few weeks is launching the new Donegal Place brand, and that's a really exciting initiative, and that's really about, it's about, I suppose, really developing a visual representation for Donegal. So it's about how we can tell the story of Donegal. So how we can look at Donegal as a place to visit, you know, from a visitor's or a tourist's perspective. But more than that, really, how we can promote Donegal as a place for investment, how we can encourage businesses to start up here, but also how we can encourage international and multinational businesses to continue to come and set up shop, really, in Donegal, and how we can, I suppose, really sell the ecosystem that we do have, because, as you know, Donegal is home to some of the most prominent multinational companies, and we have many of them throughout the county, such as Primerica and CETA and Randox, and we're really lucky to have them in the county. And I suppose really what we want to do is tell that story, so Donegal has that I suppose that offering. And I suppose really in terms, you're asking how, what we've learned and how the world has changed. And one of the key things is the way we work. You know, we all, you know, before we would have worked in the office 9 to 5, but now people in the main are working from home. And that, whilst that's been a challenge, it's actually been something that's been an opportunity for Donegal. So what you're seeing is people coming from all over the country and from different parts of the world back to Donegal to do their job. And they're doing it really well. And it's working for them. So it's opening up new opportunities for rural locations, which such as Donegal, where people can have that really good quality of life, as well as, you know, not really compromising their career or their job prospects because they have the opportunity to work remotely. And it also opens up opportunities for people living in Donegal, that there are so many kind of remote working jobs available. So, you know, across Europe, we had an event a few weeks ago, and there's about 55,000 remote working jobs in Europe at the minute. So, I mean, if we were able to get a few hundred of those to Donegal, it would make a huge difference to people living here. So, look, lots of lessons, Kieran, and lots of different opportunities that that we're pursuing at the minute.
There's been a lot of good news in terms of funding announcements over the last weeks and months, Anne-Marie, and I'm sure that backs up your take on the how much is happening in Donegal and how good it can be to come and live here. Is relocation one of the areas that you're going to be pushing in terms of that programme?
Yes, it is, Kieran, and we'll be launching our new remote working strategy too in the next few weeks. It was actually adopted by the council there at the end of March. And again, that strategy is very much around a statement of intent. So it's about looking at what do we need to do to make Donegal a really appealing location for remote workers. So if it's looking at regeneration, and we'll know over the last few weeks we've had announcements for funding for Letterkenny, for Burton Port, and for Cairn Donna and Balbofeist and Orla, of course, as well. So that type of funding going into these types of towns make them more attractive, really, for people to come and live in them and work in them. So encouraging people to relocate to Donegal. So, for example, if you're a multinational company based here and you're trying to get people to come and to senior management jobs, you want to be able to show them the quality of life that they can have, the quality of life that their children and their spouses can have. And we're able to do that. We do have that really good quality of life, that outdoor experience with wonderful scenery, really strong, vibrant communities, great sporting scene across the county, and also like lots of cultural and art activities, from going to theatres to community-based arts activities. So all that makes kind of develops a really strong picture for Donegal, and it becomes something that's really appealing for people who we're trying to attract back into the county, and we're looking to relocate here to Donegal.
Tourism, I'm sure, is going to be a big emphasis on tourism this year, particularly when we come into the second season of a pandemic. How hopeful are you of Donegal having a good tourist season with people staying at home?
Yeah, look, I suppose tourism, the businesses working in the tourism and hospitality sector have been so badly hit as part of this pandemic. And I suppose the really important thing for us is to help them survive this time round. Look, what we found last year, and people from all over the county will have seen this, is there were huge numbers of people came to Donegal. People came to Donegal from Dublin, from all parts of Ireland that had never been here before. So it was, I suppose, a new experience for many people. And we were seen as within the top three locations on the island of Ireland for what we call the staycation market, which is people from the island of Ireland coming to stay or to holiday on the island. So look, we were really lucky last year, and we had really high levels of visitor numbers. It brought issues, there's no doubt about it. For example, there was lots of the traffic jams and car parking issues and people looking for public conveniences. So look, actually what we're doing this year, we actually have a small grant scheme and we just announced it last week, and it's really for community based groups who want to do pieces of work that'll help make their own areas that wee bit more attractive. And it's really to try and address some of the issues that we experienced last year around car parking. I mean, with lots of hidden waterfalls that for some reason people were able to find, and then there was lots of traffic jams and lots of queues. So it's about looking at these areas. Can we do small pieces of work that'll help improve parking in these areas, help improve the experience for the visitor, but also really importantly help improve the experience for the local people living in that area. So look, so that grant scheme is open at the minute, and the closing date for applications is the 20th of April. So we've got a lot of interest in that. So that's something that we're delighted to be able to roll out. So we do see the tourism season. We do think it will be a good, strong staycation market. But again, that doesn't really replace the overseas visitors who are also a very lucrative market and are a very important market for us. So what we're doing at the minute is this is an opportunity for us to take stock of what we have, to look at how we can plan in terms of moving forward within the tourism sector. And we're really lucky to be working with Tourism Development International, who are a firm with a tourism experience across many, many countries. And they're working with us at the minute to look at what the key priority areas that we should be focusing on over the next few years, really, in terms of growing tourism in Donegal and making sure we do get that fair share of the overseas market, and we do start seeing people travelling up to Donegal, not just the staycation market, but visitors coming into the country. So look, that's something that we're working on at the minute.
The hospitality sector is one area that the council has been very supportive of in terms of the schemes and assistance. roughly, Anne-Marie, have an idea of maybe how much has been paid out to Donegal businesses across the county over the last year or year plus?
Yeah, there's been quite a number of different schemes, Ciarán, and everything from the waiver commercial rate scheme to the restart grants, restart grant plus, to the small business COVID assistance scheme. So all in all, we're well over the 10 million euro mark in terms of the supports that have been given out to businesses. I don't have the exact figure off the top of my head at the minute, but we're well in excess of that. I suppose the priority is about allowing businesses to survive through these really difficult times, and I am confident that we will see brighter days and that there will be opportunities for businesses to grow, but we need them to survive at this point in time in order to allow that to happen.
How successful do you feel that the schemes have been to date, Emery?
I think they've been very valuable for businesses. I think, in the main, they've probably been a lifeline for many businesses, just getting access to those funds that'll allow them to tick over during these periods. And I suppose really what I would urge businesses to do would be to, you know, if they are under pressure, is to reach out to the likes of Donegal County Council, but particularly to the likes of our local enterprise office, which is based here in Letterkenny. And the people there they're trained and they're experienced in terms of supporting businesses, so they can certainly point people in the right direction in terms of enabling them to survive through these difficult days. So I do think it has been, as I said, you're asking, has it been successful? It's certainly been supportive, and I think that's the feedback we're getting from businesses across the county. Many businesses would much prefer not to have to access these funds, but at least they're there, and they have been a support to many businesses.
How have you found the last year in terms of work, Anne-Marie? We were talking about before we started recording about the life in the world of Zoom. Is that going to be a thing of the past, or will it be a bit of both, do you think?
I think it's going to be a bit of both, Ciarán. I can't say it's going back to exactly how it was before, but I have to say, I do look forward to getting into the office. Working from home is fine, but it's a bit relentless at times, and I think I do like the structure of the day. I see what they call a hybrid or a blended approach taking place, and I suppose really it kind of aligns itself a bit with the whole climate change agenda as well, where really the less cars on the road, and people are a wee bit more cognizant now of the impact that has on the environment. So I think what you'll see is a mixture. I think we'll still be doing the Zoom meetings, but there's still nothing like the ITA contact across the table, or being able to shake hands with somebody and to meet people in person. So and I think we still have to do that. But Zoom's a great option, and it was something that was kind of forced, and not just Zoom, obviously other platforms as well, but it was something that was forced upon us. But sometimes necessity is a good thing, and I think it's made us look at other ways of communicating. But hopefully it'll not be all just Zoom going forward, but I do think it'll have a big role to play.
How much have you learned over the last 12 or 13 months with the actual workings of businesses and the challenges that they face in their day-to-day operations at the minute, Emery?
Yeah, I suppose the last 12 or 13 months has been like no other. So the challenges being faced by businesses is very different from what challenges would have been faced by businesses prior to that, you know. I suppose it's the commitment that people have to their businesses to making sure that they can reopen, and also the commitment to employees, and I think that's really important as well, and the pressure that's on businesses, the money has to be there at the end of the week to pay the wage bills and to pay all the bills, and then pressures never end; they're always there. So again, I think the supports that have been put forward by government for businesses during this time have been good, and I think they have been of value. So, for example, the wage subsidy scheme, it allows and the put payments, it allows businesses to actually lift that pressure off them during these times, and I suppose hopefully to retain staff. And I think that whole thing around staff retention is going to be an issue for businesses reopening. You know, are they going to get their staff back? Are they going to have their experienced staff that they would have had in the past? Or have people moved on and are looking at other opportunities? So I think that's something that's coming from businesses at the minute in terms of challenges that they're facing, is really around the retention of skills and the retention of people and I suppose retaining that talent that allows them to do the good work that they do in their businesses.
How important is the talent of communicating? How important is that now for you in your role when you're talking to businesses and when you're trying to get a message out there?
Yeah, look, I think it's really important. I suppose what I always said is communications. It's not a luxury; it's an obligation. I mean, we're a public authority, and we're obliged to communicate to people and with people. So, and I think I suppose really we often talk about, you know, is the message getting out there to businesses? And the reality is, you can never stop communicating. You know, whilst you think you have done your interviews, you've done your advertising. There still will be businesses that won't be aware maybe of the supports that are available. So you have to continuously communicate. And I suppose really that's what we try and do through our own platforms. And I think the likes of social media and the likes of local media, particularly local media in relation to local radio, local newspapers, and local online newspapers, it's really, really important tools and vehicles for us to communicate with businesses. So no, look, it's paramount. Amount really, and it's key to the success of what we're doing.
We are in a better place, Anne-Marie, than we were 12 or 13 months ago. What are your hopes and expectations for businesses in Donegal as we approach maybe a good tourist season again?
Yeah, like let's hope that we do get open now in the next 2 to 3 months. Really, so look, as I said, I do think the staycation market will be strong again for Donegal. I think there's opportunities there for the tourism sector in Donegal, albeit the challenges that the businesses in that sector have faced can't be underestimated. But I do look forward to a strong kind of staycation market for 2021. Also, just in terms of the work that we're doing, and I suppose we're looking at kind of even longer term plans. For example, the investment that the council is making at the minute with the likes of Enterprise Ireland and the new innovation centre here in Letterkenny, and the work that we're doing as part of the regeneration programme that we have, particularly for Letterkenny, but also for other towns around the county. So we see that coming on board over the next number of months. And what that is really about, it's about promoting and encouraging businesses to be innovative, to look at new technologies and how they can be used to develop their business, to look at new ways of doing business, and to link in with particularly with the likes of third level institutes in terms of looking at their research and how that research can be commercialised. And I have to, I suppose, heads up to the likes of the LYIT and Ulster University. They're doing great work in this area at the minute, and it's about how we can I suppose really how we can join the dots and how we can ensure that that from this research and innovation work that is underway, that we can develop these startups in the county and we can support businesses. And we do have a number of really kind of valuable startups and really progressive people at the minute operating in the county. And it's about how we can nurture that and how we can create more of those. So the likes of the Alpha Innovation Centre that's been planned for, it's a new build in Letterkenny, but we will be initiating the programme in the coming months with bringing on board an innovation manager. I think that's going to be a game changer for business in Donegal.
How hopeful are you that that's going to be maybe a catalyst for further investment in Letterkenny and the surrounding areas?
Yeah, look, I'm very hopeful to be honest with you. So, I mean, for example, I suppose one of the things that we're trying to do is there's, you know, the multinational companies that are already based in Letterkenny. There's a huge amount of talent there. So there are people working in those companies who want to develop new products, who have their own ideas. And I suppose what we're looking to do is introduce what they call a pre-accelerator program. So it's around how we support these early idea owners, or these what we call early early entrepreneurs to develop their ideas, to develop their products, and to kind of viable business propositions that will be that will have a strong customer base, and that they will be able to sell, and they will be able to basically make money out of, and I suppose really that's the type of investment that we see the likes of our innovation centre supporting. And with that, when a foreign direct investment or a company's looking at a region, one of the things they do look at is the startup potential in the areas. So they want to see what talent's there, what creativity's there, what innovation's there, and they want to be part of that. So look, it's all part of that bigger ecosystem. So it's about looking at the smaller businesses, the startups, and then also linking that into the multinationals and the foreign direct investment that comes in. So it's all part of that bigger picture, and it's all part of that offering that we would be using to promote Donegal as a place to invest.
That was Donegal County Council's Head of Economic Development, Anne-Marie Conlon. Next up is our Backing Business segment, and joining us this week is Head of Business at the Letterkenny Institute of Technology, Michael Margie. Michael, thanks for joining us on Business Matters.
Kieran, great to get chatting to you.
Michael, we're going to talk about FinTech and some postgraduate courses. We'll start maybe with the FinTech, a wide and busy area for you.
Yeah, I mean, FinTech is an area that's very particular. It's very growth. It's a growth area here in Letterkenny in the Northwest. We're probably if not the largest FinTech cluster outside the major cities in Ireland. So it's something with no small amount of pride that we built here in the Northwest and Donegal and Letterkenny. And it's a really, really interesting industry area. I mean, it's high-tech jobs. You can see there the big fins, as they call them, which is the traditional financial companies that have been around there for 100 years and 150 years. You also see the big techs then, which is the Google, the Apples, the Microsofts, the Facebooks of the world. And then you see these newer fintechs. But it's a really, really interesting area. For example, when you think of the big techs, where do they come into FinTech? Well, you have Google Pay, Apple Pay, Samsung Pay. They're all FinTech aspects now that are out there. Even Fitbit, you think about a Fitbit watch, you have Fitbit Pay, right? Which means you can pay for things using it electronically. But Fitbit, part of its way of making money is through FinTech. So FinTech is beginning to pervade a whole lot of different areas. It's on our phones, it's on our watches, it's on our fitness devices, it's in the banks on the main street when you go into them there, it's on the internet. It's really, really changed an awful lot, and it's been driven by technology and all those different technologies you have out there now, Kieran, at the moment. I mean, we've all heard of Bitcoin, the cryptocurrencies that are out there, blockchain technology that's been used as well. You have AI coming in there. In many cases, sometimes you have robo-advisors using AI technologies. And we have an awful lot of stuff going on there in terms of what's called RegTech or regulatory area as well, because that's been changing a lot in terms of open banking standards. So, previously you could be very much tied in terms of your personal details, but now you can give permission for them to move to another fintech entity or that there. And you also hear new names coming up in that area. Monzo, Revolut card, some people might be familiar with that. Starling Bank. These are all new entrants in that financial marketplace. And it's been driven by a lot of technology and a lot of changes. Many of the companies here in the Northwest are in that space. And what we've been doing is designing courses to upskill that workforce. And there's three courses in particular here today that have September starts, but we're recruiting for them now in May and June. And that's something I'd like to chat to you a little bit more about.
Yeah. How important is it for people to know early, Michael, about what the course entails and the importance of maybe setting their sights on the course early?
Yeah, it is important, Kieran. I think on the one hand, it's important because they might know that we run courses in these areas or to that level. For some people, they need to get to know it a little bit more to find out what's really involved in it. So like we have one in innovation in FinTech. We have another one then that is governance, compliance and data protection in financial services. And we've another one there, and that is user experience design and applied innovation. But they're all heavily aimed towards a tech, fintech marketplace. And, you know, it is an area, like some of the areas it covers is, you know, governance and ethics and regulation and compliance and privacy issues. You know, data privacy is such a big issue for people now. It comes all the way into your pocket on your mobile phone. And what did you click or not click on that there? It's also to do with user experience and user design. You know, if you look at your phone or your iPad, what does that interface look like? How user friendly is it? Does it make a difference between your age profile, whether you're Generation Z or whether you're 55 plus? You know, how is that interface designed for you to use it? And we even have electronic piggy banks. Apps that do that for you, where, you know, every time you buy something, it can round it up to the nearest euro or the nearest 100 euro, whatever way you want to save, and it saves automatically for you. And you can also have ethical saving as well, and all of this can be automated for you. So really, really vibrant place with a lot of change, a lot of technology, really interesting. The earlier you come to us and get talking about these programs, you want to make sure you pick the right one, but you also want to make sure it's going to fit in with, you know, these are courses designed for people with busy lives, yes, full-time lives. These are part-time lifelong learning courses at master's level. And they need to make sure that the course is going to work for them in terms of the content and the skills it's going to give them. It needs to be really at the top level, but also kind of fit in with their busy lifestyles.
And what advice, Michael, would you give somebody who is considering taking on one of these courses?
Well, I suppose the first bit of advice I would give them is to say to them, you know, research them well, come talk to us. That's really important. And you know, we have brochures and different information there that we can guide people through the course, but really having a good conversation with us and finding out more about the course is really, really important to make a good choice. Well, a lot of these courses, they really turbocharge people's careers because they're very specialized. They're giving them a really good skill set. It's a growth area. It's going to continue to grow into the future. And, you know, we've got jobs and companies here in the Northwest, both in Letterkenny, in Donegal, and in Derry as well. And the employers that are here were heavily involved in the design of these courses. These are not something that we designed by ourselves or in isolation. We really took a lot of time working with them, listening to what they wanted to make sure we got the skill set right. And in many cases as well, we bring in external speakers internationally and nationally that are at the cutting edge of the technologies and how they're being used in there. So, you know, it's a combination of what we have here in LYIT, bringing in industry practitioners as well. So it's a really, really rich learning environment. It's superb.
And finally, Michael, are you expecting a big uptick in interest?
Yeah, there always is good interest for these courses. What I would say is to encourage people now in the month of May and June to start, you know, expressing interest with us and having conversations with us about the programs. In the past, most of these courses had some level of funding. So with the Springboard initiative, we also have the Skills Nets initiative as well. And the three that I've just mentioned there, which is the MSc in User Experience Design and Applied Innovation, the MA in Governance, Compliance and Data Protection Financial Services, and the Masters in Innovation in FinTech. All three of those courses were supported with external funding as well, which helped with the fees level that had to be paid for the courses. And in some cases, really, really substantial funding available for people who want to do those courses and upskill.
Michael Margie, Head of Business at Letterkenny Institute of Technology. Thanks for joining us on Business Matters.
Thanks very much, Kieran. Thank you.
And still to come, we'll be hearing from Peter and Mairead Collett.
Do you need to upskill your tech or engineering staff? Donegal ETB's Fuller Education and Training Service can support you to do so with Python, Azure, Java and MS Expert Training. Contact Enterprise Engagement at donegaletb.ie or call 07491 20500.
Welcome back. Mairead Collett relocated back to Donegal in 2019 with her husband Peter and their three daughters after working in the UK for 16 years. The couple contacted the show about their ongoing frustrations with the recruitment systems used by companies looking to hire staff. Maria began by telling me about the issues herself and Peter have been having since they embarked on the job-hunting trio after they moved back from Wales.
I've been looking for work in Donegal for a couple of months, really. And there's been a lot of different issues with looking for work online. We started in February last year, and within a couple of weeks, COVID hit, and then the job market just dropped. There was nothing left. There was only a handful of jobs. Everybody went remote, offline, and nothing was advertised. So we did see a drop in the number of jobs being advertised last year. A lot of the jobs that I would have looked for were on a website called Indeed. And sometimes those were some strange things, like job descriptions were a bit odd, or you'd find that you'd click through and there's not really a job there. And there'd be, with Indeed, it does tell you how many applicants there was. And with one job, there was like, I was amazed to see there was like maybe 43 applicants for one job. So there was quite a lot of competition to look for those jobs. So there's quite a few difficult things with finding jobs online, I guess. It's the networking, where you sort of talk to members of family or friends and go, have you seen any jobs going, or do you know if anybody that's looking for stuff? And with COVID, it was really difficult to sort of go out and talk to people about that and say, do you know where there's work going? And with just your CV, it's kind of hard to get yourself talk to people.
You're a native of Donegal. You're back after spending time in the UK. How long were you there, and what did you do when you were over there?
I was away since 2002. So I worked in marketing in a car insurance company. It was one of the top five car insurance companies in the UK. And then I had some children, so we went part-time. And then I worked in an office, and then I worked in retail. So I've got quite a lot of UK-based experience, which I thought would be strong coming back to Donegal, but it's very hard to translate some of your things to the market here.
Pete, you're experiencing similar frustrations.
Yeah, I guess my background, being 23 years with one company and having promotions and going through internal recruitment processes, when we come over, this is my first experience really of applying to a blank market. And really, I guess, observing it now front to back, it's just kind of struck me just how difficult the process is and how really unattractive it is for something that should be really quite an exciting time. You know, coming over here, finding a new career, a new job, and I think as an employer as well, they get the chance to get somebody new in, but it really quickly becomes quite a chore. From A, where do I find a job, to then apply in cover notes and the stuff, and I've just been really struck with just, it's just really quite a bind, you know. So,
what did you do when you were in the UK? What was your job?
So I worked for Lloyds Banking Group, and an arm of that, which was a company called Black Horse Finance. So they're the number one used car finance provider, and I was a product manager in there. So a lot of what I was doing was analysis, governance, and looking at customer outcomes. So,
and what was your expectation when you relocated back to Donegal here?
I was looking for a career break, first of all, and to settle into the environment around me, use the opportunity to play a bit of golf and relax and have some family time. I think I was looking for really just a step back in my career, and I was really open to be able to do a multitude of things, really. I was hoping, really, that to get out of that finance sector, but be able to use the skills that I'd learned in any kind of industry.
Obviously, the pandemic wasn't the best time to be looking for jobs, but at the same time, Pete, there were companies looking to recruit people, and you found their methods of recruiting extremely frustrating.
Yeah, the first sort of introduction you've got are either via websites. That in itself can give a frustration, because you've got Indeed, you've got NI Jobs, you've got jobs there, and plus now a lot of companies, especially the bigger companies, are going via LinkedIn. Then you've got the recruitment agencies and your Morgan McKinley's and those big things. So from my experience of finding a job before, was that it was very narrow. Now you've got such a wide array of sources to look from. Narrowing that down can be quite hard, and you end up with an email inbox of of job alerts coming through, and again, you end up thumbing through jobs rather than focusing on what it is you really want and skills you want to want. I think the number one thing that really got me though is the quality really of job specifications and how they can really quickly become off-putting in terms of a job you like and a company that you might like the look of. You then get, I think the worst one I saw was 21, but a real list of kind of buzzwords and roles and responsibilities that if you make it down to the bottom, you just think, do I really want this? Knowing all the time that really the employer's really just putting it out there. If I could get 70% of what I'm asking for here, I've got a great candidate, but it's quite difficult.
With the job description, I would have looked at it and thought, oh, there's some of those things I can do, but if it really couldn't do some of them, I wouldn't have applied at all. And so you sort of felt like if you didn't have a lot of the experience, you wouldn't have went for it.
What can companies do, Maria, do you feel, to improve the way things are in that regard?
I think maybe looking a bit more of what sort of open up the skills that they're looking for, because there's quite a lot of skills that somebody could bring with having had a variety of different roles in the past that they could bring into that company. And sometimes the culture as well, you know, experience can bring in new ideas, so just even being open to that.
I think that the number one thing I would start with is language. You know, if these things were just written as if it was a human writing to another human and not in office lingo, you know, that would be a really, really good start. You know, phrases like self-starter. I saw one that said the candidate should be able to should enjoy dealing with an above average workload. And then you're kind of these phrases and things that come out, they're just not part of everyday work.
Why does the term self-starter annoy you so much?
I honestly, if you've got to put self-starter, it generally means we don't have an induction program. We're really busy. No one's going to show you the ropes. So you really got to get on with this as quickly as you can. You know, the notion that you're recruiting somebody on, say, anywhere from 30,000 upwards, and that the person that you recruit is just going to sit there idle until you show them what to do is just kind of a little bit insulting, really. You know, you're new, you're going to get in. Of course, it's kind of a given to someone like myself that if you're in a new company, you know, especially those first 6 months, you're on point, aren't you? You're who can I talk to? How can I, you know, you're on that lovely learning curve, which means that no one's going to have to show you what to do. They're going to have to rein you in, if anything.
Have you any idea how many jobs you've applied for at this stage and how many refusals you've got?
It's probably onwards of 30, I would say. I would probably say only, so that's 30, one interview, probably only a handful of, I would say 3 or 4 have come back and said, sorry, you've been unsuccessful. And I've always gone back and said, thank you very much for telling me, you know, because it's come from a person. And the rest have either been auto replies from companies rejecting or just nothing at all.
The automatic replies are really frustrating. You spend like half a day writing your job, your personal bio, or filling in their form, or adding in your CV, this extra application process that's got everything in there, and then the automatic machine says, no, you don't get past the next stage, and you feel really deflated. And actually, it's a bad experience with that company, because I think, oh, they didn't really bother reading my application form, or I know you're just a number to them. And you think, oh, it puts a sour taste on that company and how they recruit people.
What has been your most recent unsuccessful application?
So that was with the AIB, and that was one of the most frustrating ones. So that was through LinkedIn. There was a contact number to ring, so I rang the person, which is very unusual to actually have a number out there that you can ring someone to say, I've seen this job, it looks interesting, can you tell me more? So that the process with them was really good. But then this is one of those where you then click through to their website. You then have to register to their website and put all your details, load up a CV, and then you then had a box to put a cover letter in that said, tell us a little bit more about what you want to roll. Some standard stuff, you understand it. And it said, you've got 500 words. So I went away to do it, wrote it in Word so I could spell check it and do that thing. Went to cut and paste it, and it then said, no, this is 1,000 characters, not words. And so I pretty much sliced this. You know, it's just those frustrations that make it very difficult. And you just think, you would just like businesses to be on a little bit more on your agenda. I get how resource heavy, you know, I've been in a situation where I've recruited myself. It's not easy, and it's takes a lot of time. But it shouldn't be, if you want the right person, it shouldn't be something that's made the most efficient it can be. You know, you want the right person.
What are your plans next? What's your plans for the future? What would you like to be doing in 6 months or a year's time?
So I've taken some career coaching, which has been really good, which has really focused me on what my strengths and skills are and what it is I want to be doing. And it wasn't lost on me that some of these jobs I got rejected for, or I didn't necessarily want. So it's not born on me that's kind of calm a bit has come around. So I'm at the moment doing a garden design course. And I'm out there at the moment just doing some little garden maintenance and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to sort of developing that. And
is that something that you aspired to be at any time, or is that a totally new departure for you?
So I've always had my finger in the ground, if you like. I've always done vegetables and things like that. And I noticed now through doing this career course that the things that I loved doing were around being creative and making things better. And that's why I always got my teeth stuck into things like customer complaints. And so any time there was a chance to make a process improvement and all like that. And then so to combine that with the love of being outdoor, I mean, that the chance to work in Donegal outdoors in the summer, making things better and making things nice for people, is very, very attractive.
Okay. What about yourself? What are you looking to do in the future?
I'm really looking for some more work, and then I'm trying to think. I'm currently working on the website for Creaselet.com, so I've been tapping away at writing blog posts on that and adding new stories to that, so keeping myself busy. But then I think maybe looking at more courses as well. I'm not too sure which one. So there's a couple of agencies out there that a group called Wise. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. It's like they help women in business or women in looking for work and that. So there's a couple of agencies out there that will probably approach as well.
So
start their own business maybe.
What lies ahead for the Corbett family?
One thing that's been great about coming over to Donegal is, you know, come over with 3 young children, and even though we've had the pandemic and it's hit them, but they've been able to settle in beautifully. There's a lovely family orientated culture, especially where we are with lots of cousins. So that's been really, really good. And it's really a chance to get out there, which I'm really excited about, you know, to see the opportunity, to see that the people now within Ireland, within the pandemic, are coming to Donegal. I feel that there's an awful lot of opportunity coming this way, either via tourism or second homes, to really help people who are coming to the county to see the best of it.
And finally, you're here to stay, Peter, are you?
I'm here to stay. Yeah. Even I might just need help with shouting from the wind from time to time, but it makes a change from the Welsh rain.
Well, that's it for this edition of Business Matters. Thanks to my guests, Anne-Marie Conlon, Maria and Peter Collett, and Michael Margie. Thanks to Kenneth Wilson on sound, and thanks to you for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, drop an email to businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Business Matters, in association with Donegal ETBs for their education and training services, offering globally recognised Prince 2 project management training, which leads to better results in your projects.